I'm Robin Lustig in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. For nearly 25 years, volunteer doctors from one of the world's leading aid agencies have been working in Afghanistan. They were there during the Soviet occupation in the 1980s. They were there under the Taliban in the 1990s. And they stayed even while the bombs were falling during the US-led military action after 9/11. But now, Doctors Without Borders is packing its bags and leaving Afghanistan with, it says, a deep feeling of sadness and anger. Sadness because 2 months ago, five of its people were shot dead in Afghanistan, apparently deliberately targeted in an ambush in the northwestern province of Badghis. And anger because the authorities in the capital, Kabul, seem unable or unwilling to bring the attackers to justice. 5 years ago, Doctors Without Borders was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, in part because it goes where no other agencies dare to go. In light of the recent killings, is pulling out the right response? What message does it send to political groups, to governments, and to the local population? If you work in some of the most dangerous places in the world, do you have to accept that sometimes your people will lose their lives? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest this hour joins us from London. She is Vicky Hawkins, the former head of mission in Afghanistan for Doctors Without Borders. But first, let's turn to Carlotta Gall, who's a New York Times reporter currently based in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Carlotta, what I'd like to get from you is just a sense of what the situation in Afghanistan is now, particularly the security situation.
Well, as you probably know, we're approaching elections in October, and so the security situation across the country has deteriorated, I think, because of the election pressure. There's two main problems. The thing that killed the MSF people in northern Afghanistan was the local militia gang. They are still armed and still very present all over Afghanistan. They're fighters who fought the Taliban or fought the Russians, and they're still around and cause a lot of the violence. This was an ambush. In June, there was another ambush of Chinese construction workers. 11 of them were killed in another part of northern Afghanistan. And then we have another different kind of violence caused by the Taliban remnants and other militants who are against the government. And they have been targeting Afghan government people, American forces, but also aid workers. So they've been responsible for some particularly nasty bombs, one bomb in eastern Afghanistan, which killed women election workers, also in June. So we've had a lot of different types of violence, and I think it is growing because of the approaching elections, the added tensions between either militia leaders who want to affect the elections or the Taliban who want to disrupt them.
And how can the government there in Kabul respond to this violence? Does it have a capability to confront it, to deal with it?
It's very difficult. I think the government is struggling. Interestingly, they managed with the international peacekeepers in Kabul to catch and defuse several explosives, which they think were targeted at the population recently, car bombs and then one bomb left in a schoolyard. So they managed to catch those and defuse those. So there is, to some extent, they are managing to keep their eyes open and avoid some of the violence. But in the outlying regions, it all depends on the local militias and who's in charge. And as we've seen with MSF, the central government can't even arrest the people they're pretty sure did it because the militias are too powerful.
Would I be right, though, in thinking that the government of President Karzai very much would like the organizations, the NGOs like MSF, Doctors Without Borders, to stay in Afghanistan to continue their work?
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, there has been some criticism of NGOs from government officials and from the general public who complain that there's been a lot of foreign aid coming into the country, but they don't see the results down on the ground. And so there's quite a lot of complaints that NGOs, you know, drive nice cars and live in nice houses and where's the money? But I think there's no doubt that there's enormous admiration for the hardworking NGOs that have been there for years, like MSF, because everyone remembers they were there during the war, during the Russian times, and so on, and during the Taliban. So I think it's a big blow for the Karzai government that such a reputable agency completely pulls out, and very embarrassing for him because the reason is his government can't act.
Carlotta, thanks very much indeed for that. Carlotta Gall of the New York Times speaking to us from Kabul in Afghanistan. Well, let's turn now to Vicky Hawkins, former head of mission in Afghanistan for Doctors Without Borders. She is in London. Vicky, thanks very much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome.
Before we get on to Afghanistan specifically, for the benefit of listeners who are not familiar with the work of your organisation, just paint a picture for us. What does it do? How large is it? Where does it operate?
MSF is an independent medical humanitarian organisation. We're operating in approximately 80 countries worldwide, and we were founded in 1971. As I said, with independent medical, the work that we do is primarily medical. I think we're most renowned for our work in conflict areas, but in fact we work in a lot of non-conflict areas as well, and specifically we're working in some very highly technical areas such as HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis. When I say independent, I mean we work independently of governments and other political actors, so we stay apart from their agenda. In other words, we achieve this through a high level of private funding. We work to an 80-20 ratio for private and government funding.
So 80% of your funding comes from private sources?
That's right, comes from private individuals. In Europe, in Australia, in the States,
now,
worldwide.
When you work in a conflict area, what kind of relationship does your organisation have with the armed groups, whether it is a state army, whether it is an overseas army, a peacekeeping force, a local militia? How do you, as volunteers, as medical people, how do you interact with them?
We're completely separate from them. We try not to interact at all, in fact. We very much keep our distance. We do that because we're a neutral organisation. We're not taking sides in conflicts, and we don't want to be seen to be on the side of any party to the conflict. So we keep our distance. We, of course, will talk with military actors, but we're in no way cooperating or engaged with them when we come to our work.
So tell us then what happened in early June in Afghanistan in the northwest of the country.
Yeah, well, as you said in your introduction, we came under an attack of an unprecedented scale. We've never suffered from an attack of this severity in MSF's entire history of operations, and that's 33 years of operating in some of the most violent conflicts in the world. But on June the 2nd, a clearly identified MSF vehicle was ambushed and the five occupants were shot dead, three Europeans and two Afghans. And obviously, yeah, it's immensely traumatic for the organisation to lose people. We went through a mourning process, and we're still very much in that. We're immensely sad about the loss that we've suffered, and our hearts and thoughts are very much with the families of those who were killed.
Do you know, do you believe you know, who did it?
We have credible evidence from the government of Afghanistan that, as Carlotta said, that local militia, local commanders were responsible for this attack. And when I say local commanders, I'm talking about people who are actually affiliated to the security agencies of Afghanistan. In other words, they're part of central government. And we are obviously deeply upset by the fact that the government is saying this, but also their lack of action deeply disappoints us. The fact that they know who are responsible, these people are in fact actually allied to central government, yet they seem to completely lack the political will to do anything about it.
This is an area some substantial way from the capital, from Kabul in the northwest of the country. Just describe it a little bit for us, if you could, and tell us what your organisation was doing there.
It's a very remote part of Afghanistan. It's very mountainous. It's very beautiful, by the way. We were working in rural health clinics. In fact, we were scaling down in this part of the country, but we had one clinic remaining where we offered mother and child health facilities, general consultations, and we were running a tuberculosis program.
Now, you say this was an unprecedented attack. Nothing like it has ever happened before in the history of the organisation. Some people, though, might think to themselves, here you are operating in a war zone, in a conflict area. Sooner or later, something like this is bound to happen.
MSF has suffered losses before, that's true. Nothing on this scale, though, as I said. As a humanitarian organisation, we do work in risky situations. We recognise that. And in fact, humanitarian work was born out of war. The origins of humanitarian action come from World War I. So we were born from conflict. And as a result, by necessity, we do work in risky situations. However, our premise when we are working in a conflict area is that we go in there accepted by the parties to the conflict as a neutral and independent actor who is just there to offer medical assistance to people who really need it. I'm talking about the civilian population, not the parties to the conflict, not the combatants, but people who are just caught in the middle of a conflict and there's no one else there to look out for them.
Why are you so confident, Vicky, that the attackers knew who the victims were and had deliberately targeted them as volunteer workers, as employees of Doctors Without Borders?
We're not actually so sure that it was a deliberately targeted attack. We can't say that. All we have is the evidence that the government is giving that this was a local issue. We're not an investigative agency ourselves. We can't undertake our own investigation.
Is your vehicle marked, for example?
It is. It's clearly identified as MSF, yeah.
So when they saw that vehicle coming down the road as it approached, they would have been clear as to whom it belonged?
We would assume so, although we were driving a white Land Cruiser. Unfortunately, in Afghanistan these days, it's not just non-governmental organisations that drive white Land Cruisers. The situation in Afghanistan has become increasingly confused, and military personnel are often to be seen driving the same white Land Cruisers that are the identity, are the trademark of aid organisations. I'm in no way saying by that we would put military actors in Afghanistan, we would hold them responsible for the killings of MSF. It's clear that the people who pulled the trigger in Bad Gis are responsible for those killings. But there is a very confusing situation existing in that country at the moment with regard to who does what.
We'll come to this in a moment. Just very briefly, do you think you know why they did it?
No, we really can't say. We're not investigative experts, as I said. It's really up to the government of Afghanistan to release the details on the attack and motives behind it.
We're talking this hour with Vicky Hawkins, former mission director for Doctors Without Borders, MSF, in Afghanistan, about that organisation's decision to leave the country after nearly 25 years. Call us on 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Robin Lustig. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection.
I did see that the Doctors Without Borders left, and I'm sorry they did, because they were providing an important function for the people who want to live in a free society.
Well, that was President Bush speaking at a news conference in Washington, D.C. yesterday, responding to a question about the decision by Doctors Without Borders, MSF, to leave Afghanistan after nearly 25 years working there. Our guest this hour is the organization's former head of mission in Afghanistan, Vicky Hawkins. Vicky, there you have the President of the United States expressing his regret that your organization has decided to leave Afghanistan. Does that cause you any pause? Do you think perhaps it may be a time to think again?
No, I'm afraid it doesn't. In fact, we find comments such as the one made by President Bush yesterday extremely unhelpful. And I'm afraid they only reinforce our conviction that the situation in Afghanistan is becoming, it's becoming impossible, in fact, to offer independent and neutral humanitarian assistance such as the type that we're trying to offer.
Well, why is it unhelpful for the US president to pay tribute to your work?
It's not the tribute that we have concerns about, but the fact that we are indicated as an organization that is in Afghanistan with the aim of providing healthcare to a people looking to live in a free society. This linking of an American coalition objective of creating a free and democratic society in Afghanistan with our own work is exactly what we find has been detrimental to our security in contexts such as Afghanistan over the past year. We've been working in this country for, as you said, nearly a quarter of a century through successive periods of its history and with different governments and different political groupings in power. We were there before the coalition arrived in Afghanistan, and we would have intended to have stayed there afterwards. But comments such as that made by President Bush, we find, have an impact on the perceptions of what non-governmental organizations such as MSF are in Afghanistan for.
And I know even before Mr. Bush's comments, you were concerned, were you not, about some leaflets which were being distributed in a different part of the country from where you lost your colleagues, but leaflets that were being distributed by coalition forces, which did seem to link humanitarian aid and the gathering of intelligence.
That's right. It was, I think, in May there were some leaflets airdropped on the south of Afghanistan, which did exactly what you said. They linked the provision of humanitarian assistance with the provision of military intelligence.
They said, essentially, they said, unless you tell us about the Taliban and al-Qaeda, you won't get any more aid.
Yeah, that's right. It has to be acknowledged that the Pentagon officially apologized for this act and retracted the leaflets. But as far as we're concerned, the damage is done. That apology will not be heard in the villages of southern Afghanistan. They now perceive NGOs as being, and the assistance that NGOs give as being linked with a military objective. And obviously, for our security, it's extremely dangerous. And at the end, it completely hampers our ability to reach those who are most in need.
OK, let me put an opposing argument to you, though, Vicky. You say that you do not want to be linked. You do not want people to perceive you to be linked with a military objective. You also say that what President Bush says that the US wants in Afghanistan is for the people of that country to live in a free and democratic society. Does your organisation not want exactly the same thing?
MSF is about providing healthcare. We're a medical organisation. That's all we're about. We work in these places in an independent way, and we do that so that we can reach those who really need us. It's not our job to comment on the objectives of the coalition or the United States of America or the people of Afghanistan either. All we're about is volunteer doctors and nurses who are providing medical assistance to people in dire need.
Alyssa is on the line from New York City. Alyssa, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I really admire the work that MSF does, and I'm a proud donor to the organization, and I want to give my condolences to you for the loss of your colleagues.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
To me, this just exemplifies the futile war on terror. Here are people who are so self-destructive that they attack innocent humanitarians who are only in their country to help them and to care for them in their time of need. It's a heartbreaking situation that's happening. And the sort of people who would go after humanitarians who have been in the country for so many years and have sustained these people through the worst times of their life, to go and destroy them, it to me is just mind-boggling, and I can't believe that there hasn't been more of an outrage throughout the world about this. This is just horrifying to me.
Alyssa, you give your money to this organization. You clearly support the work that they do. Do you support their decision to leave Afghanistan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, I trust them because they've been doing this work and professionals, and they are in, I think she said, 80 countries around the world. They certainly, I think, are better prepared to judge the safety of a country and if they should be there or not than I am or any outsider is, quite frankly. And I know from my experience with them that they wouldn't be doing this unless it was absolutely necessary. Clearly, they have gone through so many other horrible experiences in conflict regions. So obviously, this is a really emergency type situation that they would have to pull themselves out of, which is why I can't believe that there hasn't been more of an outcry for justice for these innocent humanitarians. It's heartbreaking.
Vicky, it cannot have been an easy decision. I imagine there were hours of heart searching before the decision was made, because you must have people there saying to you, you're turning your back on the people who need you.
Absolutely. No, you're right. It's heartbreaking for us. And I can assure you, more than hours, weeks and weeks, we have spent discussing this. We made the announcement last week. The attack happened on the 2nd of June. So we did not take a snap decision with this, and nor do we take the decision lightly. And no one knows better than us the impact that this will have on the patients that we're treating. We reach tens of thousands of Afghans a year. We're working predominantly in mother and child health. The needs of women and children in Afghanistan, the health needs are enormous. The infant mortality rate is still one of the worst in the world. One in four children die before their fifth birthday. We have hundreds of patients on tuberculosis treatment. It's a killer. They will die without treatment. We do the best we can to ensure a handover of those patients to the Ministry of Health. But we know this has a drastic impact on their quality of life.
1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK. Roger called that number. He's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Roger.
Hi, thank you. When you take in consideration the history of Doctors Without Borders, and specifically in Afghanistan, doesn't this somewhat show to be a canary in the coal mine as to how bad things must actually be there compared to what we're being told in the United States? And why wasn't it deemed necessary, since you were providing such a humanitarian aid, to have some security?
Vicky, security?
We do work with very tight security regulations, and we're constantly paying attention to security management. Unfortunately, we just didn't foresee this. We didn't foresee this event. The part of Afghanistan that this attack happened in is not the most insecure. The most insecure part of the country to date has been the south and east of the country, and there we have scaled back our programs accordingly. We were working, but in a far more, we were exposing ourselves less, I guess you would say. In the west, there has targeted attacks have not been a feature of the security environment. So we felt that we were more able to travel around in a freer way. I have to say, still not in a completely free way. We have very tight security regulations, and we adhere to them. MSF was not the only NGO operating in this area either. There were a number of other organizations that also deemed it to be a relatively safe area to operate.
Given all that, Vicky, I mean, you must have asked yourself this question. Could it not have been a single rogue, one-off attack, unlikely ever to be repeated?
There is, it could be, and especially the fact that it would seem to be that local commanders were responsible. However, one factor in the decision-making behind our withdrawal, which we haven't discussed yet, is that in the immediate days following the attack, the Taliban claimed responsibility. And at the same time as they claimed responsibility, they legitimized this by accusing MSF of working on behalf of Western interests, and that as we were there with that agenda, then we were at risk of further attack. We absolutely refute these allegations. And in fact, we find it extremely ironic that MSF, which is perhaps the organization in Afghanistan that has worked the hardest to keep its distance from a coalition agenda and from the whole reconstruction process, in fact, that it should be us that is accused of working on behalf of Western interests.
Finish your thought,
but,
yeah.
But that does, besides the fact that we object to the accusation and we consider it an attack on independent and neutral humanitarian action, it does leave us open to further attack. And if we were not a direct target before that accusation was made, then we consider ourselves to be afterwards.
Let me bring in Nathaniel Raymond now. He's the Communications Advisor for Humanitarian Response at Oxfam America. And he himself was in Afghanistan immediately after 9/11, working there with Physicians for Human Rights. Nathaniel Raymond, you've been listening to Vicky describe how MSF, how Doctors Without Borders came to its decision. Oxfam is still in Afghanistan, isn't it?
That's correct. We're operational in 16 provinces throughout Afghanistan with about 200 staff.
So does that imply then that your analysis of the security situation there differs from that of Doctors Without Borders?
Well, I think it's important to note, Robin, that every organization has to make its own decision based on its security context about whether to suspend or continue operations in an extremely dangerous environment like Afghanistan. And it's not apples and apples, it's apples and oranges. MSF was operating in areas where sometimes they were the only organization there. And they were providing services that were unique to MSF. Oxfam, on the other hand, is providing different types of services in other parts of the country. So, you know, we're constantly doing it on a day-by-day, case-by-case basis. And for us, we've decided to stay.
I know a substantial number of aid workers, most of them Afghan nationals, have lost their lives over the past 12 months or so. Has Oxfam lost people?
We've lost six Afghan partners, staff in the past year or so. And I just want to say, echoing your callers, that I'm on behalf of Oxfam, have the most sincere condolences for MSF. I mean, though I didn't know those people, being in the humanitarian aid profession, we know the experience of losing colleagues, and there's nothing tougher.
Nathaniel, does Oxfam have to review on a regular basis whether or not it should stay in Afghanistan?
Oh, yes. It's a day-by-day, week-by-week process. We're never assuming anything. We're always making sure that we're doing everything day in, day out to protect our staff, to protect our partners, and also, most importantly, to protect our beneficiaries.
And is it your perception that it is getting more difficult for your people to work there now?
Well, think about it this way, Robin, that right now in Afghanistan, you have basically 20,000 U.S. troops and about 6,500 International Security Assistance Force personnel. That means from that group, you have basically one peacekeeper, one soldier for every 25 kilometers, and basically one soldier for every 1,115 Afghans. That is an impossible situation with that type of force to secure the country. Whereas in Kosovo, you had 40,000 troops, which broke down to basically one peacekeeper for every 50 people in Kosovo. Simply put, they just don't have the resources in Afghanistan right now to stop the security situation and the space for aid workers from continuing to contract and contract. It's diminishing returns. And if there isn't a real commitment from the international community, put their money where their mouth is and get security on the ground in a meaningful way, it's going to continue to get worse. It's not rocket science.
Okay, Nathaniel, thank you for that. Vicky, this brings us back to the relationship between the military and the humanitarian aid worker. You have spelled out very clearly why you and your organization believe that there has to be a very clear difference between the military and those such as yourselves who are doing humanitarian work. But could you not also argue that you would be able to do your work better
if you worked more closely with the military, if they provided more security for you, if you worked with them side by side in providing both security and humanitarian aid simultaneously?
No, MSF does not look to military actors to provide its security. That's completely contrary to our identity and what we stand for. We work on the basis of acceptance from the local population and acceptance from the warring parties as to our identity, as to our neutral and independent status, and as to the benefit that we can bring in a time of crisis. These principles have governed the work of MSF for 33 years and have stood us well in some very violent situations. But it seems that in Afghanistan today, there is a complete lack of respect for these principles and a complete lack of space to operate and to provide medical assistance.
But if one looks back, for example, to the experience in Bosnia in the early and mid-1990s, wasn't one of the lessons there that humanitarian aid agencies could not operate without the presence of and sometimes assistance from military forces?
Sometimes military forces can be useful providing logistical support for a relief operation. I think of a context such as Bangladesh, where the floods are obviously extremely severe and aid agencies sometimes lack the infrastructure, the resources to provide heavy logistics. But in a situation such as Afghanistan, a highly complex and very politically sensitive environment, for military actors to be supporting humanitarian activities, engaged in humanitarian type activities, it's extremely dangerous and only adds to a confusion and prevents organizations like MSF from doing the work that it needs to do.
We'd be interested in hearing what you think about this relationship between humanitarian aid and the military. Can they work apart from each other? Should they sometimes work more closely with us? Our guest this hour is Vicky Hawkins, former mission head of Doctors Without Borders in Afghanistan. Call us 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My thanks to Nathaniel Raymond of Oxfam America, who joined us this segment. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. We're talking this hour to Vicky Hawkins of Doctors Without Borders about that organisation's decision to pull out of Afghanistan after nearly a quarter of a century working there. Join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Vicky, you were talking about how the space in which you and your colleagues operate in countries like Afghanistan, specifically in Afghanistan, is beginning to contract. Why do you think that is?
I think the international political climate is such that the them and us idea, that you're either with us or against us, is one that is being proffered by different actors, and I'm not just talking about President Bush. There is an inability to recognize that actually there is a space in the middle. There is a space to be neutral. You don't have to be with or against. You can be in the middle without political affiliation and just trying to get on and do what we do best. This space in the middle is actually, it's enshrined in the Geneva Conventions. It's enshrined in international law. There is a legal framework which allows for independent humanitarian action to happen in times of conflict. And for the deal is basically that us as humanitarian actors, we're not allowed to take sides. And what we get in return for that is we get access. We get access to the people most affected by the conflict, which is generally the civilian population caught in the middle.
OK, but let me suggest this to you. In theory, that may all be true, but you're operating very often in exceedingly poor countries. You are operating with a land cruiser, with satellite telephones, with high-tech electronic gear. This is stuff which people could make use of, which they could sell, which they could make money from. You are inevitably going to be targets, aren't you?
It's true that humanitarian action, by its nature, it operates in highly politicized and volatile contexts. And yes, we're not saying that it's inevitable we end up as targets, but inevitably
you're vulnerable. Let's put it that
way. Yeah, there is an attempt to manipulate humanitarian assistance. But still, we fight against that. That's our raison d'être. We are constantly fighting to find that space in the middle, to talk to the warring parties, be they government, be they rebel leaders, be they insurgents. That is our responsibility. It's our identity. It's why we're here.
We're going to take another call. Steve is on the line from Cape Cod in Massachusetts. Steve, hi.
Hi, I'm a little confused about your position. On one hand, you seem to be blaming the Bush administration or the words of the president, and then say, but we don't have an idea as to how things really should be governmentally. That's not our issue, but it's the Bush administration's fault that we're in this position. And in fact, your people, sad as it were, but were attacked by Afghans. And if I understand it, you set yourself up in an area where, or you want to be set up in an area where you're welcome by both sides, and in fact, obviously, you were not welcome. So you seem to be taking a political position without saying we're taking a political position, because you're firmly laying this at the feet of the Bush administration.
No, I'm not. I'm not doing that. I'm saying that the president's comments were unhelpful. I'm not, that's a different thing from actually pinpointing responsibility. Yeah, we are asking to be accepted by all sides of the conflict. That's true. And we don't take a political position, but we're a neutral organization. But we do talk, we do speak out when we think that political actors' comments prevent us from assisting people who really need it. That's when we will reserve the right to speak out against a political grouping, a government, whatever it may be. But we won't make political judgments on their strategy or policies.
I want to explore that a little bit, Vicky, because you insist that you can draw this line between politics, between taking up a political position, and the work that you do as humanitarian workers. I've just been rereading the acceptance speech that was made by your organization's then president, James Orbinski, when he accepted the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of MSF in 1999. Here's a bit of what he said. He said, there are limits to humanitarianism. No doctor can stop a genocide. No humanitarian can stop ethnic cleansing, just as no humanitarian can make war and no humanitarian can make peace. There are limits to what you do. You must accept, must you not, that sometimes someone has to do what you don't do, and that will impinge on how effective you can be.
Sorry, Robin, I don't understand. Well, the question
you say that you can separate politics from yes. what you do. But it seemed to me, from what James Orbinski said when he accepted that Nobel Peace Prize, that in doing so, you accept that what you do is very limited. It's short term. It's attaching a sticking plaster to a wound rather than trying to stop other people getting wounded.
We do accept it's limited. We do accept it's short term. It's about saving lives during crisis situations. And then hopefully the situation will improve and will enable people to and people will be able to pick up and get on with their lives. MSF is not about the move into sustainability. Yeah, so it is limited. I absolutely agree with you. But also we do try to act as a force for change. And where we feel we come in on that is that we act as a witness to what people are going through. We have, up until recently, been acting as a witness on behalf of the Afghan population. We have been speaking about the fact that the health situation in Afghanistan is not improving. That is what we are qualified to speak on, in fact. It's only the health situation, because we're medics and nothing more.
But that phrase, a force for change, that's a political judgment, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. A force for change for people's well-being. If abuses are being carried out, then we will act as a witness against those abuses, and we would hope that steps would be taken in, and that something would change, which would prevent those abuses from happening.
You see, many people will remember the terrible events in Rwanda 10 years ago, the genocide there, nearly a million people slaughtered in a matter of weeks. MSF, I think, was in Rwanda at that time, wasn't it? It, as a humanitarian organisation, could do very little, but it could ask for political and military action.
I'm afraid I wasn't in Rwanda, so I'm really not qualified to speak on what happened there. My experience is Afghanistan, and that's what I'm able to talk about. But in certain situations, such as genocide, then we may take the step of asking for military action, but that would really be an exceptional situation. We believe our responsibility is to point out what is happening, and that is what we are trying to do in Afghanistan. We're pointing out that we are leaving because of, we're pointing out the reasons that we're leaving, but we're also pointing out the background to our departure.
If at any point the authorities in Kabul were able to bring to justice or in some other way deal with those people who you and they believe were responsible for the deaths of your colleagues, would your organisation then reconsider its position as far as Afghanistan is concerned?
Yeah, it would be a definite step in the right direction. But there are other factors behind our withdrawal,
Taliban.
I've talked about. Exactly. We would have to have some kind of indication that we were not at direct risk from the Taliban. But also we would want to see a general improvement in the security situation. 32 humanitarian aid workers have lost their lives in Afghanistan since last March. It's an outrageous figure. This direct targeting, it's a new feature in Afghanistan. It's never happened before. And we would have to see some kind of improvement in that situation before we would return.
Just going right back to what was being said at the top of the hour at the beginning of the show, Carlotta Gall of the New York Times was saying that the central government, the government of President Karzai, is so weak in the capital, Kabul, that he cannot take action against the people who he and you believe were responsible for the attacks on your colleagues. Do you accept that that is the case, or is it your organisation's position that he could do more if he wanted to?
We think he could do more. We absolutely recognise that there is a lack of capacity in central government, but that does not excuse a lack of political will. The government of Afghanistan, they say they know who was responsible for the attack on MSF, but they're not willing to take action. And if they can't go in and arrest, the least they could do is issue warrants for arrest. And not even that has happened.
And do you have an explanation for why that should be the case? It is difficult to imagine any government anywhere, let alone in a place like Afghanistan, which would not wish an organisation such as yours to stay and to continue its work.
Yeah, I really don't know. As you say, you would have thought that the priority would be the people, us working for the well-being of the Afghan people, but it would seem that's not the case.
Let's talk to Ben, who's here in Boston. Hi, Ben.
Hi there. I spent last summer with a group in Nicaragua, and I was doing health education there. And I just remember that one of the things that was really strongly reinforced by our organization called Amigos de las Americas was this idea of cooperation with local groups, working with both individuals in the towns that we were living in and also working with government agencies. And clearly in the case of Afghanistan, that's going to be difficult based on the conflict there. But and I know that it's something that MSF does, works with nationals from the country that's hosting them. But I just thought, I think that's a very important thing in my view of international aid, this idea of building a partnership and that itself provides a certain level of security. And unfortunately, it wasn't able to prevent the deaths of these MSF people. But I do feel like that is something that could be even embraced even farther in the aid community than it is now, and it is something that provides a certain level of security.
Okay, thanks for that, Ben. Vicky, you were suggesting that Afghanistan, certainly it is getting more difficult for organisations such as yours to operate because what you call the space in which you operate seems to be getting smaller and smaller. Are you able to give us some assessment of whether you think that extends beyond Afghanistan? Is it true elsewhere?
Obviously, we have concerns that we see the same trends in other contexts. Our operations in Pakistan are seriously impacted by the severity of the attack, but also by the Taliban threat. And there are other contexts such as Somalia and Iraq where we have similar concerns.
And is this largely because the perception seems to be increasingly that people who come from outside, whatever they may say they are doing, whatever the logo on their vehicle, they all tend to get tarred with the same brush. They are all regarded as somehow agents of the rich West.
Yes, exactly. That is the case. And it would seem that despite 21 years of history in Afghanistan previous to the arrival of the coalition forces, that the memories of MSF as an independent organization were very easily erased in the minds of the Afghan population.
So by the end of this month, your operations in Afghanistan will have been rolled up. You had, I think, something like 80 international volunteers and 1,400 Afghan workers there. What will happen to all of them?
Well, for our Afghan staff, unfortunately, they lose their jobs. We look after them as best we can. We recommend them to other organisations. But with MSF departing, then we can't be, we don't have a commitment to them in the long term. It's very hard. But over and above that, our hearts are really with our patients. As I said, there are tens of thousands of people who potentially they lose access to healthcare completely with our withdrawal.
Those clinics, those health centres, all of those operations that you have been running there for so many years, they simply stand empty now?
No. The majority of our facilities will go to the Ministry of Health and some will be handed over to other NGOs. But it has to be recognised that the Ministry of Health lacks resources. And in many cases, I'm afraid the sad fact is that some of those health facilities, they will be closed as a result.
Vicky, thank you so much for spending the time with us. Vicky Hawkins, former head of mission in Afghanistan for Doctors Without Borders, which is now leaving the country. Earlier, we spoke to Nathaniel Raymond of Oxfam America and to Carlotta Gall of the New York Times, who joined us from Kabul. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. Thank you.